Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about what happens in your body when you consume just two sodas a day. The Karolinska Institute in Sweden gives us that answer. Also, a new study from Cornell University looks at diet and heart disease and comes up with an interesting perspective. Americans, on average, today are 15 pounds heavier than just 20 years ago. What does that mean in realistic terms? And for those of you who've had a good workout and you'd like to recover a little faster than before, well, there's something you can do. And that something is Montmorency tart cherries. I'll explain what they found out at a university in the United Kingdom. Also, why you're stiff in the morning. Your body suppresses inflammation when you sleep at night, University of Manchester. And for women, soy in this major study protects you against diabetes and heart problems, especially if you suffer from polycystic ovarian syndrome. So that's very common. And that's from the Cashin University of Medical Sciences. We'll give you that. And a lot more on health and healing. I decided not to have a guest today so we could spend more time on TalkBack. And I'm going to play some audio clips that will lead us into the area that we need to pay attention to. So we're going to look at population control and Bill Gates' idea of why that's a good thing. And, okay, we're going to discuss it. You'll have a chance to talk back on it. Also, one of the measures of a person in public life are the people they surround themselves with and who they find as their heroes. Well, one big hero of the left and the right is Henry Kissinger. In fact, multiple occasions in this campaign season, Hillary Clinton has said that, you know, he is one of her favorites and they love each other. I'm going to play you a clip that reveals now we have absolute proof that Henry Kissinger was involved in death squads. And it's now been leaked through WikiLeaks. So does that alter our perception of the person who praises him, who would have known this? Or the person who should have known this? Also, I've been suggesting for several years now that our country is slipping into a totalitarian mindset and that it's being done incrementally and done in such a way that the policymakers and opinion leaders are never impacted, but a lot of other people are, like asset forfeiture. In fact, just to put this in perspective, more money was taken legally by the police for people who committed no crime. Tens of thousands of people stopped, cars confiscated if they liked your car, homes confiscated, businesses confiscated, and cash confiscated. And yet you weren't fined, you weren't given a ticket, you were just told, well, we think it's drugs, and therefore they stole it. Why haven't we protested this? Because more money is taken this way than all bank robberies and burglaries combined. So the police are now the number one perpetrators of stealing in America. Shouldn't that get on someone's talk about list? But it isn't. It should be. We will talk about it. And also some comments made many years ago by President Eisenhower, warning us in 1961 who we should be concerned about. And boy, was he prophetic. He was right. Then I'm going to also today, time permitting, I want to take you inside of Haiti in a place you've never been, but the Clintons have, and it was because of Bill and Hillary Clinton that this place exists. That's good. It brings good labor and skilled labor with a living wage. Oh, no, it doesn't. No, just the opposite. It brings a tiny little bit of a highly exploited labor to friends who donated to the Clinton Foundation. I'll explain that. But this is not unique. 3,000 additional places like this exist around the world. And the baby teeth of Iraqi children tell a troubling tale of war's toxic impact. In spying's new frontier, private firms are collecting data on every single American adult. Did you know that? We're not talking about the government now. We're talking about private industry. How are they getting this information? What are they doing with it? Well, they're compiling in such a way that it can be used against you. Did the ACLU know about this? Did anyone know about this? Have you heard about this at all? It's a reality. I'll share that with you. As you see, we have a lot to share, and we take a lot of different topics because we have people listening all over the world, plus all those syndicated stations. We appreciate it. Let's begin. We know that sodas are bad. The question is, how bad? Well, this will give you an indication. This is from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. Quote, here's one more reason to consider cutting back on the soda. Drinking too many sugary drinks on a daily basis has been linked to gallbladder cancer. Swedish researchers studied the eating and drinking habits of 70,000 adults, keeping an eye out for cancer diagnosis. They found that people who downed two drinks, that's it, two soft drinks, are doubled the risk of developing gallbladder tumors compared to people who abstained. This was published in the Journal of National Cancer Institute. And yet we're raising two generations now, the X generation and the millennial generation and the Y generation, actually three, to believe that it's perfectly acceptable when you want to drink to have a soft drink. And then a lot of them think that some form of artificial fruit drink instead of a natural fruit juice is good. And that's why we have so much sickness, especially immune sickness and obesity in young people. I believe that we need a national education program to talk about what we should and should not put into our body if we expect to be healthy. Cornell University completed a study, and I just filmed up at Cornell for my new feature film. Filmed about 9 people up there. I'll talk about that film when it's nearing premiere in about a month. But researchers during the last 5 years have been cautioning people about eating eggs and meat because these foods generate a common dietary compound called TMAO. That's trimethylamine in oxide. Now that's bad because that is indicative of a role in heart disease. And they published this in the peer-reviewed journal Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. And this raises serious questions about what happens when you start getting an elevated TMAO in your body. So here's the takeaway message, that when you're on a high-protein diet or you're on the standard American diet, you're consuming an awful lot a protein. These are animal proteins. And most people think that eggs are healthy. In fact, there's a whole foundation, the Weston Price Foundation, that attacks veganism, attacks soy, and promotes animal-based diet. The trouble is the actual peer-reviewed scientific literature, which I have reviewed every single study I could find in English, over 5,800 studies on soy, shows that they help prevent disease. And yet I have no studies, not a single study, showing that meat in the diet prevents disease. But I've got a lot of studies showing it causes disease. Unfortunately, it is how convincing an argument you make, not the accuracy of what you're arguing. It's like that person looked presidential. We should vote on because the tie they wore and the smile they had and how quick their retort was. What about the context of their beliefs and values? That's irrelevant. Why isn't that completely relevant and irrelevant how they look? Well, because in America, we're so used to image. We buy the image, and then we don't question what we get with it. Well, when people try to tell you that the high-protein diet is the diet, Just remember, all you have to do is go on and look under meat-based diets and health consequences, plant-based diet and health consequences, soy-based diet and health consequences, and you can read for yourself and you'll see the truth. We also have found out from the CDC and the Prevention National Center of Health Statistics that we are 15 pounds average heavier today than 20 years ago. That's inaccurate. It's like saying the average American consumes 140 pounds of processed refined sugar a year. No, that's not true. I don't consume any, not an ounce, and I know many others don't. That means the people who actually consume sugar are consuming a lot more. That means the average for those who are not focused on health is not 15 pounds, it's closer to 30 pounds, taking you from being overweight to taking you to being obese. And we are a nation in an epidemic of being overweight. So what does this mean? It means in the last 20 years, and this is after examining 19,000 people, that we are eating a lot of empty calories or too many calories, including meat, which has that fat, and that gives you 8 calories per gram compared to 4 for carbohydrates and 4 for protein. So we're just stuffing ourselves. We don't need all this. In fact, just the opposite. Periodic fasting on juices are extraordinarily important for our good health. So there's no secret here. We're not exercising regularly. We're spending too much time sitting. And we're eating processed foods instead of living foods. So now we have an epidemic of overweight. And with overweight, you just reduce your lifespan by about 10 years. And you're more susceptible to heart attack, stroke, and cancer and depression. Good news from a Northumbria University in the United Kingdom, published in the Prairie View Journal Nutrients, the Montmorency tart cherry, which is not that tart, and especially if you use the concentrate, that's what I recommend, you have a great way of recovering from athletic events. So if you play tennis, you go for a run, you go for a bike ride, and your muscles are tired, exhausted, according to this double-blind, placebo-controlled study, you are going to recover much quicker when you use Montmorency tart cherry juice. It's good for damaged muscles. So if you're a weightlifter, a long-distance runner, playing basketball, your muscles get tired, rugby, soccer, lacrosse, 1 4-ounce glass of Montmorency tart cherry juice. And that would make a big difference. Now, a lot of people realize that there's something different between when they went to bed at night and when they wake up in the morning. And according to University of Manchester, it's the relevance of a protein in the body called cryptochrome. And what is it? It has very strong anti-inflammatory effects in cultured cells. And what this does is it helps our biological clock regulate inflammation, because it seems that when we're sleeping, our biological clock actively represses inflammatory pathways within the affected limbs during the night. And that means that you're less likely to wake up with inflammation in your knees and your joints. And that's important. So my suggestion is that you simply enhance that. How do you enhance it? First, by getting a good night's sleep. That's extremely beneficial. And a good night's sleep means that you would try to get 8 hours, turn off the lights, make it dark. If you need earplugs for noise, background noise, do so. And try to have either Montmorency cherries, which produce melatonin naturally in the body, bananas, which produce it, oranges, which produce it, prunes, which produce that. You want all that because you want the natural melatonin. Now, under worst-case scenarios, synthetic produced melatonin, okay, but much better to have your body produce it. It's much more effective, and that's secreting all night, and that way you get a better night's sleep. But if you work until you're exhausted, if you're eating sugary foods before you go to bed, if you have light on, if there's noise, if you're near an electromagnetic pulsing clock or cell phone or computer, all of it interfere with melatonin production. And hence, you wake up and your body's not protected. You don't produce the melatonin, and as a result, your body is more pro-inflammatory. So a good night's sleep is anti-inflammatory. A not a good night's sleep is pro-inflammatory. If you also take some magnesium and calcium, about 1,000 milligrams, that relaxes the musculature. Therefore, your muscles are more relaxed when you wake up in the morning, less pain. If you took some vitamin C and quercetin, some coenzyme Q10 and L-carnitine, and vitamin E and tocotrienols, all of those help protect your heart and your brain and prevent stroke and thin your blood, and all that's good. So those are important things to do. Now also, soy. And according to this study from the Cashin University Medical Sciences, when you take soy, it helps a woman who has polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS. That's a very common condition. And you can actually improve your metabolic and cardiovascular health by consuming soy isoflavones. And that's been published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Now, for the layperson or someone just turning into this program for the first time, soy ISO flavones, F-L-A-V-O-N-E-S, isoflavones, are naturally occurring plant-based estrogens found in the soybean plant. Now, we're talking about non-genetically engineered soy, of course. And they are found in foods like soy milk, and you can get them in some supplements as well. And they use the soy isoflavones to show what would they do for women, and it had a substantial benefit. And we're not talking about a few women or a few hundred thousand or even a few million. We're talking about 6 million or more women in America have the syndrome. And among the most common hormone disorders in women of reproductive age, this syndrome occurs when a woman's body produces slightly higher amounts of testosterone and other androgen hormones, meaning the sex hormones typically associated with men, but also found in women than what is normal. And the resulting hormone imbalance can cause irregular and absent menstrual cycles or infertility or weight gain or acne or excess hair on the face or breasts or body or thinning of the hair on the head. And so women who have polycystic ovary syndrome also face a high risk of developing other health problems, including diabetes and heart disease. So by taking in something as simple as soy isoflavones and getting rid of coffee and caffeine, my own research at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a postdoctoral fellow and did my research on caffeineism for my primary thesis, and I did 2 years of clinical research, I found many reasons not to have the caffeine in the diet. But when so many Americans are consuming caffeine, then you actually bias the science. You start looking for reasons to support drinking coffee because so many people have a desire for it and it gives them that caffeine kick in the morning. But that also means they're probably adrenal exhausted. Instead of rebalancing the adrenals and rebuilding the adrenals with vitamin C and pantothenic acid and B complex, they just go ahead and take their caffeine. I got my energy, I have my caffeine drink. But at what cost? So much better to get the energy naturally. NAD produces energy. PPQ allows energy. Coenzyme Q10 allows energy. NADH allows energy. These create energy naturally. These help the cells without any harm. Caffeine is not healthy. And there are gazillion ways of understanding this. The trouble is try to get someone who feels addicted to caffeine to give it up. Science doesn't matter. And that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll on the road. Let's now go to an audio clip because this is going to be part of our talkback segment. This is an audio clip from Bill Gates. It's a short one. I want you to listen carefully what he has to say, please.
First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. But there we see an increase of about 1.3. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Okay, I just wanted to have that repeated a couple times so you heard it in context. Now, this is not the first time. He has said this on multiple occasions. He has sponsored world forums on this. And lo and behold, a group of Catholic doctors in Africa at multiple hospitals found that in the vaccines were contraceptions. They weren't told that. The people getting the vaccines were told it was to protect them against a disease. No, it was to sterilize them. All right. We have a lot of people on the planet. Here's the question. What do we do to manage the population as compared to the resources? We don't want to see people starve. We don't want to see babies dying. 27,000 die every 24 hours. But who has the right to determine whose life has value and which life does not? Now, unless I miss something, I have not seen anyone of the Bill Gates policy-making reputation advocating that lawyers or rabbis' families or, let's say, professors at Columbia or hedge funds, their families should be the ones that have no more children. Could you imagine if it was suggested that all lawmakers in Washington and all lawmakers at the state level no longer be able to have children? They should have the vaccines or they should undergo the birth control. But that's not the way it is it? In the real world, it is always those who have the least say must trust upon the word of others and therefore extremely vulnerable. What do you think about Bill Gates and the eugenicists? And by the way, Bill Gates, one of Hillary Clinton's heroes is Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. Now, you can think good or not about Planned Parenthood. That is your right. But why is it that they've sanitized a eugenicist who believed and stated she was not inhibited in this, that the feeble-minded or those of no social value should be euthanized? And that she actually said at one point it should be between 10 to 15% of the American population should be killed for the betterment of those who wanted a better gene pool. It was actually the Nazis working, and I wrote an article on this. In fact, this is in one of my new documentaries that I'm working on, Manufacturing Madness, where I give you a history of the eugenics movement, and it did not start in Germany. It started in America. Professor Pope and Paul and all these other leading academics believed in it. It was a big, big deal. But it was a German scientist who began, a psychiatrist, who began to look at this and realize we have hundreds of thousands of people with diagnosed mental conditions in the hospitals. Let's euthanize them. And they did. I actually was able to find footage of a group of German doctors celebrating with champagne the end of killing all the people in mental institutions. This is prior to killing the Jews and gypsies and others and the communists. This was the beginning of it. And the architect of that was Margaret Sanger. Why no discussion about this? Again, separate from Planned Parenthood, your positions on abortion, pro or con, that's your right. But when Hillary Clinton embraces someone, does she not know that she was a eugenicist? When Bill Gates talks about eugenicists, and one of the heroes of Bill Gates is Margaret Sanger, who says you have the right to determine whose life has had value and not? That's our talk back. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now, This is also disturbing. This is a longer piece. I'm only going to play a small part of it. The rest of it you can hear on our website. And by the way, we are launching a great new website for the Progressive Reader Network. We have a new team in place, hiring new people, and we're going to be starting a whole bunch. We're 45 new programs starting. So the fall is an exciting time. I'm starting a new television program. I'll tell you all about it. And got a lot of it already in the can done. And I just want to thank the 253 million visits in the last 12 months to our site. We're upgrading everything. We're going to have a progressive documentary channel where we'll have thousands of documentaries on progressive themes free for you to watch, plus discussions, film discussions, and we have a whole new video. We've just installed a massive new video system so we can do Skyping and real-time feeds around the world. So all that's coming, all it's happening. Now let's hear a few minutes about Henry Kissinger's papers revealed death squads.
1 year after the release of the Kissinger papers by WikiLeaks, the full impact of those documents is becoming clear. According to the release, Henry Kissinger personally ordered the creation of death squads in South America that were responsible for thousands of deaths. In 1973, the National Security Advisor directed the assassination of the president of Chile. 11 days after the murder of Salvador Allende, Kissinger became Secretary of State. The late leader was the first Marxist elected to head the nation by open elections. 1 year after the assassination, the Kissinger papers reveal he managed the invasion of Cyprus by Turkey. The invaders were supplied by the United States and trained by NATO. Kissinger played the role of unofficial advisor to Dick Cheney in 2003, assisting in the planning for the invasion of Iraq. Now 90 years old, the former Secretary of State still manages Kissinger Associates, a secretive group of political and business leaders. Bilderberg meetings, often at the center of theories of world government, is hosted every year by Henry Kissinger. The Bilderberg Group website states that the meetings are held under the Chatham House rule, which states that participants are free to use the information received, but neither the identity nor the affiliation of the speakers nor of any other participant may be revealed. The Kissinger cables comprise of 1.7 million diplomatic records beginning in 1972 and progressing through the end of 1976. Over 320,000 of those documents were originally considered classified information. The material has since been declassified and were obtained through the National Archives and Records Administration. The Kissinger cables are available on a searchable database on the WikiLeaks website, and the whistleblower organization stated they released the documents in part because of an effort by the government to reclassify much of the information. Henry Kissinger is famous for saying, "The illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little bit longer."
Okay, now there you have it. Finally, we can say unequivocally, based upon historical documents that were hidden from the American people, that Henry Kissinger is a war criminal, and therefore, with Hillary Clinton praising him and vice versa, and he being at all these major conferences, he heads the Bilderberg Group every year. He's on the Council on Foreign Relations. He's one of the closest advisors to David Rockefeller, who's still alive after 100, I think 101 now, who founded the Council on Foreign Relations. He has Kissinger and Associates. He was a big advisor to Obama and to Bill Clinton and to George Bush. So what does that tell you about both the corporate Democrat and corporate Republican establishment and the need to pull away our energy and support from them and look for more ethical and honorable people to tell us about the truth of history? Now, I'm going to take your calls in a moment, and I see calls are coming in. I also want to mention that we have created new phone numbers with a new system to protect them and give better quality. So when you want to call in and listen live, Monday to Friday at noon, you should get a better call, a clearer call, and it will not be able to be hacked. Not now. Let me give you the new number. Please write this down. And a whole list of numbers are up on our PRN studio. So if you go to progressiveradionetwork.com, there are a bunch of numbers. Why? Because we have had such an enormous increase in people wanting to listen over the telephone that sometimes a particular bandwidth is filled. When you get over almost 80,000 in 1 hour, it's just too much. And that's where we're at now. No one's ever had that in history of in 1 hour. Now we're going above that. So we've got multiple lines. So you no longer should ever have a problem listening. Let me give you the main number. Please write this down. To listen live, Monday to Friday at noon, 701-801-3662. 701-801-3662. And this one, they can't hack. We did something unique. I can't tell you what it is, but when you hire the best people out there, and we wanted to know who are the best people who can break any system, and that's who we brought in. Now we have phones that they will not be able to take down. So write this number down. Monday to Friday, you can listen to me. 701-801-3662. And it has more services. You can actually listen to live over the air to our archives from this as well. So a lot more services. Give us a call if you want to talk back about eugenics, about Bill Gates, any of these matters. Please give us a call at 888-874-4888. Now, here's one more thing I wanted to give you that you can think about that you might want to talk about, and that is Saudi Arabia. I believe that based upon a careful examination of the documents and the 9/11 Commission report, even the co-heads of the Commission report say it was flawed. They want a new independent one, free of the government interference. They don't want, like the Warren Commission, these other commissions, they don't want the insiders on the commission. They want independent, true scholars on the commission. Now, when the heads of a report, the heads of a commission tell you it's flawed, we should pay attention. These are not conspiracy theorists saying this. But they also said the Saudi Arabians were involved. Now we know that for a fact. Why are we still doing business with them? Why are we trading with them? Why are we taking their oil? We don't need to. Why are we selling them armaments? Why did Hillary Clinton sign off on anywhere between $69 billion to $100 billion when she was in office? That's just utterly corrupt. So we're saying you can commit an act of war against America, you can kill over 3,000 Americans in the 9/11, and we will not hold you accountable on any level? That's deplorable. Listen to this. Saudi Arabian Uncovered Secrets Revealed, mind-blowing documentary. By the way, who is this? This is the BBC. The BBC is saying this.
There is a state which beheads and even crucifies its citizens, where those who question its authority are lashed and locked up for years. A state where women lack many basic rights, patrolled by religious police, where children are indoctrinated, but this is not the Islamic State. This is the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. A close ally which buys billions of pounds worth of British arms, whose security forces we equip and train, even though they're in conflict with many of their own people, whose oil we buy, and whose royals get the red carpet treatment.
We have a relationship with Saudi Arabia because we receive from them important intelligence and security information that keep us safe.
Working with a team of Saudi undercover cameramen,
watch this.
This film sets out to penetrate one of the world's most secretive and repressive states.
The women, they're imprisoned. They just fear freedom.
Because of American and European support to the Saudi monarchy, our people have suffered.
And we will uncover how Saudi money and ideology has helped drive terrorism around the world.
I think there's a very real threat that the ideology that comes from there is posing to us. Morally, we need to make a stand. I think that the chickens are coming home to roost on this one.
In January 2015, the Union Jack was flown at half-mast in Westminster. A very special mark of respect for a close ally. The Saudi ruler, King Abdullah, had died. Many world leaders came to the capital city, Riyadh, to pay tribute.
Allahu Akbar! Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
In the same month, in another Saudi city, a young blogger was whipped in public. Raif Badawi was convicted of insulting Islam after he spoke out about his government and religion. He wrote, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion." For comments like this, Badawi, a father of three young children, was sentenced to 10 years in prison and 1,000 lashes.
We don't approve of what Saudi Arabia does. We don't like what they do. But they are a necessary evil in combating other regimes. And, of course, ultimately, they have a lot of oil.
No country is the perfect ally, perfect partner, without any reservations whatsoever. So, you know, welcome to the real world. Welcome to the Premier League.
Now, you just heard David Petraeus. You just heard an ambassador. And by the way, the children in the official Saudi schools, what they were saying in their language was a death to Christians and all Christians. And yet we act as if they're crucifixion of people, they're beheading of people more than ISIS this year, they're sponsoring the attack against 9/11, the sponsoring of terrorism in the entire Middle East, the illegal destruction of communities and thousands of people killed in the poorest country in the Middle East, Yemen, the attacks in Libya. This is all with Saudi Arabia. They're a terrorist organization. And yet we choose to do business. What does that say about we as a country when we're not protesting this, along with some of the other terrorist states, such as the United Arab Emirates and Egypt, Qatar, Kuwait? Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. Say hello to Robert from Long Island. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for doing the most important things that people can do, to share ideas and give us all better understanding, challenge some of our foolish ideas, and replace when necessary. Okay, I want to make a couple of comments. When I was in high school back in the 1950s, I learned that there was eugenics movement in Cold Spring Harbor, and I don't think you mentioned Princeton, New Jersey, Princeton University, and the Educational Testing Service, which was to determine the intelligence of people by race, by ethnic group, et cetera. Okay, so there were those two major centers of eugenics thought and policy making. And we also learned that there was something called the euthenics movement, which was to make a better world through living conditions for all people, educationally as well as physically. And that was in conflict with the idea that everything is heritable and that genetics is the way to go about either by eliminating people, or now we have genetic engineering, so there's even new vistas to be looked at. But the ideas of the European Enlightenment taking us away from monarchies and religious domination was to introduce reason into people's lives, which didn't exist before. We went by revelation and by authority figures, and human beings learned that they could reason and seek truth, by many means, particularly science, where that's applicable, and the only hope of the world, as I see it, is extending this understanding to all by making sure that everyone gets the very best education that's available. And that, and that's a cliche, of course, that education, whatever education is. We argue over New York State testing for education to eliminate bad teachers, but what are we teaching for? I mean, we should be teaching for the development of the highest potential of each individual, because we all have some unique things to share with each other, and we're all the richer for it. I don't believe we can sustain a limitless number of people on the earth, but we have to get them. I mean, one comment was give all women PhDs, and they won't want more than two children, if even that, if they have full lives in commerce and education and so on. Well, there may be some other people from Long Island.
Okay, thank you. Let's say hello to Mike from Florida. Hi, Mike. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Good afternoon, sir. I would like to bring up the point about Bill Melinda Gates, the Zika virus, and Brazil, and GMOs. It all started in the 1940s. As you know, Zika was patented by no other than the Rockefeller Institute, and we never had any outbreaks, and it was in the jungles of Africa. Then a British biotech company called Oxitec was tasked with creating male GMO-altered mosquitoes, and they were released in the northern state of Adaware, Brazil. Where did all that Zika come out of? Brazil. And what their Melinda Gates and Bill were all about vaccination, and as you and I know, as concerned parents and public, do not want vaccinations that are not safe, and they don't want vaccinations without our consent. What will give us a vaccine, unfortunately? A mosquito. So now this mosquito is transmitting this disease, and they're spraying toxic chemicals all around southern Florida without, you know, consent, without permission. So it seems like the mosquito is a great way to geoengineer people with vaccines and to force people to run to a vaccine.
Okay, let me just add something here, Mike. What we do know about the Zika virus is that there is a genetically engineered version out there. And why no one is paying attention to what happens when you release a genetically engineered virus into the environment? Also, where you find the Zika virus most predominant is in an area of Brazil where they have the highest use of glyphosate, the
wow.
herbicide. It is very toxic, and you do not see the Zika in the families who are healthy and well-fed and away from the spraying fields. You see it unique in the poorest population. Now, that doesn't mean it stays in the poorest population, but instead of improving the living conditions and standard of living and the environment and the water and the quality of nutrition, you think that a vaccine can do this. There is no vaccine that has ever improved the quality of life, and the science is there to prove it. And by the way, Richard Gale and Jeremy and myself wrote an article on the efficacy of vaccines with over 56 scientific footnotes, and it's now on the website. It's there as a public service. So if anyone wants to see what the challenge to vaccines are, it's there. And unfortunately, almost all the people out there with the movie Vax, which is a very good movie, and I recommend you see it, are pro-vaccine. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., pro-vaccine. Andrew Wakefield, pro-vaccine. And I'm now asking, with all the science that Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Dr. Nancy Banks and Dr. Tony Bark and myself have written on, and others, each with a minimum of 10,000 hours of scientific research and publishing multiple articles, why would they be pro-vaccine? Why in the world would you be pro-vaccine when we can prove scientifically that there has never been a study, not once in history, of a double-blind placebo-controlled study of one group of people vaccinated, another group not vaccinated, follow them for 5 years and see who develops which conditions, which symptoms, and what mortality. If you've never done that, and you're only comparing one vaccine against another vaccine, that's garbage science. It's fraudulent science. So those who are pro-vaccine, I would ask, please take the next step. Do your homework on efficacy. Do they work? Because without efficacy, there is absolutely no rationale for vaccinating anyone with anything at any time. We also published another article 3 weeks before that I broadcast on the program, and it's in the archives, but you can get the actual article. And I write the articles with the idea that they will be used in courts of law. In fact, we vet everything we write through our team of lawyers and say, would this withhold cross-examination in a court of law? That's our standard. So if you're an activist, if you're a concerned parent, if you are in California, if you want to challenge the state's law on mandatory vaccine, we now have the safety and efficacy articles with the studies supporting that article that can be brought into a court of law. And there's no reason that we should not be challenging the vaccine. And what we should do is get someone in office, like a Jill Stein, who would strip away the protection that the manufacturers' vaccines have. If we took away the protection that they have so they could be sued, you would see all vaccinations stop in the United States, all of them, because they know the truth. But they're protected now, and they're making $30 to $50 billion collectively this year. Mike, thank you for your call. Robert from Long Island, your turn.
Hello. It's obvious that overpopulation of the Earth has caused tremendous degradation of the Earth and the environment. So if things can be done to help lower population where people would agree as a group to do it, I'm not talking about any particular group, but in general, to lower population, it would be obvious how great an improvement this could be for the resources and for the planet.
How would you suggest that lowering the population be done?
Well, for example, in this country, I believe that government policy sort of encourages, through taxation breaks, encourages people to have more children. If it were reversed and they gave a break to people who had fewer children, that might be something that might help a lot.
Okay, I appreciate your input. I thank you for that. Here's the reality that we must address. Every single study, without exception, shows that the majority of the planet's resources are consumed by those who are affluent. The people who use the least resources, cause the least pollution, use the least water, use the least land, do not destroy the land, do not spray on the land, are the poorest. So if we are going to be honest, we have to realize that we have mismanaged the resources. If we manage them correctly, then we would not have these biases that are fallacious. For example, when Leonardo DiCaprio won an award by a riverkeeper for, you know, talking about the environment, which is good, he flew from the Cannes Film Festival back to New York, picked up his award, and flew right back on a private jet. That caused more pollution and hence contributed more to global warming than over 1,000 individuals in their entire consumption of living in a year. So we have this kind of double standard of people who claim to be for something and then watch how ostentatious their lifestyles. Are they eating organic? Are they growing things themselves? Are they using solar or some other form of non-polluting technology for their comforts? Do they live within an austerity concept, meaning are you only buying what you need? Or are you buying things you don't need? And if you're buying things you don't need, where are those things grown? Are they grown in organic, or are they grown under some form of corporatized dystopian system? Let me give you an example of that. In the world right now, there are places that are called special economic zones, or ZEZ. Now, these special economic zones, there are over 3,000 of them. They employ about 65 million people. Most of those people are migrant or poor women. Now, let's say that you are a poor woman in Bangladesh and you have to work and you're going to be paid 14 cents an hour. That is not something you can live off of. That's where you work. You work in these zones. These zones have no protection for the workers. These zones do not give you a living wage. These zones exploit you because they control the political system. So the people who are making the profit from the exploitation of the natural resources are the ones who are never held accountable. They're never asked to sacrifice. They're never asked, can you lower your standard of living? Can you use less? Instead, they exploit those who are then accused of having too many children. So shouldn't we take a moment and ask ourselves, who is really guilty of exploiting the nation or the world's resources? Who cuts down the timber for those hardwood floors or for those special homes they need? Do you see, there is another side to this. I appreciate your input. Thank you very much. And I want to thank all of you for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.